Greetings and welcome to today's meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California. I'm Gerald Harris, Chair of the Club Science and Technology Member-Led Forum and your host for today. We also welcome the listening audience and we invite everyone to visit us online at commonwealthclub.org. Now it is my pleasure to introduce our speaker, John Leland. John Leland, in addition to being a friend, has been a media innovator and marketing communication expert for over 40 years. He is the founding director of creative services at USA Network, a keynote speaker, and an award-winning video writer, producer, director, whose clients include AT&T, Xerox, HBO, Pacific Bell, and Oracle. Among other venues, his video work has been featured at Disney World's Epcot Center and the Metropolitan Museum of Art. Most recently, John is the author of the book, Internet Marketing, 8 Key Concepts Every Business Must Know. And he is the president and creative director of the strategic online communications and website design agency, ComBridges.com. Without further ado, John Leland.
Thank you very much. Let's see if we get this adjusted a little bit. Oh, man, that'll work. You hear me okay? Thank you all for coming out tonight. It's great to be here, and I genuinely love the subject of the future of digital video and social media. As Gerald said, I've been involved with video and kind of new media, if you will, before there was new media. And I want to kind of just dive right in with my bio very quickly, because my career literally overlaps the decades of revolution that we've had in the video business. Very quickly in the 70s, I founded what, to my knowledge, is the very first ever narrowcast radio network. So in the early 70s, when I started this thing called Unicorn News, there was only the broadcast networks, ABC, NBC, CBS, PBS, end of story. The fact that I did a radio network targeted to a specific audience was completely innovative then. When I was at the founding director of creative services at USA Cable Network, that was the beginning of narrowcast television. So ESPN, MTV, CNN, et cetera, you know, that they were all born in the early 80s when I was at USA. And then in the 90s, I was really on the leading edge of what's become the digital video production revolution and produced a couple of, I call them the digital video and the desktop video, because like, you see the equipment that I'm sitting in there, that was like innovative desktop equipment in the 90s. And of course, everything that all those machines could do and that we used to do with $500,000 worth of equipment now can be done in one, you know, high performance notebook. So, but anyway, I was helping to educate video production people about that then. And then in the aughts, I guess we call them, in, you know, around 2000, a little before 2000, I started doing websites and getting involved in the internet, and was writing for Videography Magazine a column called The Video Web. And you know all the excitement that was going on about the beginning of video being delivered on the web, which of course is here now today, and I'm gonna be talking about not just where we came from, but where we're gonna be going. And now I'm doing websites and internet marketing consulting strategy for small businesses. I like to talk about humanistic marketing, and that's part of what video excuse me, is bringing to the table. And as Gerald mentioned, wrote that book that they are selling out in the lobby, Internet Marketing, 8 Key Concepts Every Business Must Know. And all of that is really under this banner that I call Spanning the Grand Canyon Gap Between People and Technology. Because all of this moves so fast that it's really tough to keep a perspective. So I really see that as my big job. Like this diagram shows, if I just inundate you with data and all the amazing statistics, and I will give you some pretty amazing statistics, without the context and understanding kind of like how this is moving and where it's going, I won't really give you the value that I want to give you. What I want to give you is actionable information. So I've broken the talk down into 5 parts to try and make it as clear and give you as much takeaway as possible. One is kind of how to look at all this new media and how it works and how this, you know, kind of like a perspective that I think is usable. And then 4 key trends and what's going on with video and social media that really is kind of rocking our world. So the first thing that I have to say in terms of how do we think about new media and all this innovation, I don't know, how many of you are familiar with the story of the blind men and the elephant? I'm just curious. A few. So the story about the blind men and the elephant, this comes from India. And the idea is that the blind men, to a blind man who's on the trunk, you know, he thinks that it's like a snake. To the blind man that's on the tail, he thinks it's like a rope or a broom. You know, the one that's holding on to the leg thinks that it's like a tree. And this is all to say that digital video and social media, the web, any one of those is not one thing. It's, you know, it's many things to many people. And so we can't sit, I can't talk about digital video as one thing. I can break it down into some big picture trends, but it's going to look different to everybody depending on their point of view. The other thing is that, you know, it is, I'm going to skip over that. I mean, it's hard to think about this because it's moving so fast. You just have to get the perspective that this stuff is moving at a rate that's almost incomprehensible. And I'll give you some perspective on that in a minute. The other really common mistake that I see over and over again is that people go, and it goes back to the movies and television, really, that when television was invented, the common knowledge was TV's going to, I'm sorry, when television was invented, the common knowledge was the movies are going to go out of business. And that obviously has not happened. We still have movies and we go to the theater. So it's A plus B. And really then A plus B plus C plus D. The TV, you know, movies have not gone away just because we have television. And, you know, TV and cable, I'm going to talk about streaming and all, streaming delivery, but just because we have streaming delivery doesn't mean that Comcast is going to go under tomorrow. It means that there are going to be more slices to the pie, and cable operators like Comcast are going to have smaller pieces. But one thing doesn't just replace the other and wipe it out. And these changes are accelerating. I mean, that's the hard thing to wrap our brains around, but it's true. And the other thing that I can tell you for a fact is that the toothpaste is never going to go back in the tube. The changes that we're seeing today are really the tip of the iceberg of this tidal wave, or I'm going to use the word tsunami in a minute. That's an ongoing process. So I don't mean to freak anybody out, but that's the kind of the water we're swimming in. And part of the value, I think, of a talk like this is to get some perspective on the water that we're swimming on, because this is going on all the time, and it's just not going to stop. So very quickly, I want to give you just a perspective on that. So I like to draw on my iPad from time to time, and I made this one about, I don't know, a couple years ago. So we're really, in terms of looking at the web, right, this giant thing with many heads, like I talked about before, that has literally changed everything, it's only 20 years old. Right, 20 years is like, right, and from a historical perspective. But 1995 is where the internet existed before that, but 1995 with the Mosaic browser and Netscape was where the web became the web, where you could click on links and move between pages. Facebook, it's more technically 2006, actually, but, you know, is less than 10 years old. And now at 1.2 billion or more users and is this incredible global phenomenon. So here we are in 2015. All of that is really kind of like the hors d'oeuvres. That's the perspective that I want to give you. Or to look at it another way, how much has happened just in the last 10 years. I talked about Facebook. Twitter's about the same age as Facebook. YouTube was launched in late 2005. And I'm going to give you a sense of how big YouTube truly is. The iPhone is only since 2007. You know, all these smartphones that people can't even walk now without keeping their face glued to it. And the iPad's only 5 years old. So again, here's a foundation for, we're talking about the future of video and social media. This is the kind of what we're building on. One last data point before we launch into the four main trends here. So traditional TV engagement is declining, except amongst the oldest part of the population, right? And I'm in that too, although I'm definitely cutting back on my TV and I've reduced my cable channels and all of that because I like getting streaming media. But if you look at the younger demographics, I don't know if you can see the detail, they're dramatically less engaged in TV. And for those of you that aren't social media enthusiasts, engagement is like the heart of the matter. Are people really engaged? I could do a whole talk about TV and the kind of zombie-like state the TV puts people in. Part of what I like about streaming media and the internet is it's interactive and people do get engaged and they're active and participating. That's part of what's new about it. But the fact of the matter is that things are really shifting and television and cable ain't what they used to be. So what are the four major trends that I've identified that we can use to look forward into the future and how this is evolving? The first one is that we're used to cable TV, we're used to DVDs, and what's happening is that the delivery is happening via streaming. And that's an entire new universe of video, and I'm going to talk about how that happens. The second is that production, which used to be controlled by the studios and the networks like an oligopoly that controlled everything, has completely been obliterated. I mean, they're still there. Again, remember A plus B. The studios and the networks aren't going away, but entirely new channels that I'm going to explain to you are opening up both for producers and consumers. The third thing is that the paradigm where we used to have one-to-many broadcasting, where the networks and the studios were the ones from the top feeding down the rest of us, that pyramid has been flipped. And now consumers are becoming producers with their iPhones on social media and all kinds of smartphones. And all kinds of new production companies are being born. You know, I was talking to one of the gentlemen in the audience here who's producing for a university. Universities are now broadcast channels in a very legitimate way. And you can find all kinds of college courses streaming on the web. But the point here is that the consumers are now driving the content in unprecedented ways. And I'm going to give you some kind of pretty mind-blowing examples. And then finally, for me, the heart of the matter is that what's happening with the web and streaming video via social media is really a pull towards authenticity. Essentially, people's bullshit meters are at an all-time high, and their tolerance for pitch, 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 sell, sell, sell. Everybody's nodding their head for this. You know, we all kind of know how painful that is. And so what's happening is new opportunities to engage audiences and participate in entirely new ways. So those are the four major trends. Shall we dig in? Sound good? Thank you. So number one, the future of video is streaming delivery. It's cloud-based. Has everybody here heard of cloud computing and know about the cloud revolution? Who hasn't heard about cloud computing? Put it that way. Okay. So no longer are we dependent on a VCR or a DVD player. I really am kind of, tired of having all that stuff around, and streaming just to me makes a whole lot more sense. And like I said, that represents a decline for all those other hardware operators from cable TV on down. So what we're moving from, and even when you're talking about downloading on the internet, we're no longer dealing with the local file management. What that means is where you have to buy every song or you have to buy every movie. You have the option to do that, A plus B again, it's not gonna go away. But you really have now the opportunity to subscribe to services. The one that everybody seems to understand is Netflix. Right, you subscribe to Netflix, you don't have to buy movies, you just watch stuff, and you pay a monthly fee. What's happening is, in the audio world is really kind of demonstrating where things are going. Services like Spotify, like Apple Music, like Pandora, and one that I want to particularly emphasize is podcasts. Audio shows where it's going. You know, this talk to a relatively small audience here in San Francisco is going to be available as a podcast. There are all kinds of producers doing all kinds of content within podcasts, and they're finding their own small audiences and followings at a level that was unimaginable in the era of broadcasting. So the audio is showing us the way. So the cord cutting's begun, where we're getting movies, we're getting TV shows, we're getting all kinds of TED Talks, university programs, et cetera, coming to us via Netflix, coming to us via Amazon Prime, coming to us via Hulu, coming to us via iTunes and Apple TV, YouTube, and social media. So that's the beginning of streaming delivery, and like I said, that's brand new. So I want to give you a feel for the scope of streaming. And I'm going to use Netflix and YouTube as examples. They're kind of the top of the tier, but obviously they're just examples. It's not the whole thing. So YouTube, which only was launched in 1999, about 10 years later, in a matter of months, shifted from being the post office's fastest growing user of first class mail, all those red envelopes that most of us remember, to being the biggest source for evening internet traffic in North America. And then they executed what to me is one of the most brilliant business pivots, you know, maybe second only to Steve Jobs' return to Apple, where they shifted from being strictly about those red envelopes to offering a streaming subscription service, right? Just like I was saying on the audio side, it's like Spotify. But, you know, a lot of people are still doing their red envelopes because they don't want to deal with the bandwidth. But Netflix saved their own ass, so to speak, by becoming a streaming media company. And they, you know, kind of not only saved the company, it made them a leader. And that was only 5 years ago. Okay, we're here at the end of October 2015. That was 2010. So now they have 65 million subscribers in 50 countries who consume 2 billion hours of programming a month. So streaming is real, okay? This is the tsunami. YouTube is equally impressive, and at a whole other level because they're not driven by movies. You know, when I talk about social media marketing and help companies with social media marketing, it's the number two search engine. Okay, kids are doing homework and searching, okay, what does a platypus look like? They don't go to Google, they go to YouTube and say, show me a video. And so the number of searches on YouTube is second only to Google. And I call it a social network because people are commenting and sharing and so forth. It has over 1 billion users, so it really is the number two social network behind Facebook. And 80%, this is like kind of hard for me to grok around, so I slow down just a little bit here. 80% of the views that are going on YouTube are outside the United States. Okay, it's not a USA phenomenon, even though it's a USA company. And the local versions of YouTube exist in 70 countries. And kind of my favorite statistic is the navigation for YouTube can be done in 76 different languages. We're not talking about just French and Spanish. We're talking about, like, you know, I don't know how many languages there are in India and so forth. It's like, you know, so it's truly a global network of content. And another really important point is that now about half of the YouTube views are on mobile devices. So if you think that video or television exists only on cable, you really need to think again. Not only because Netflix and YouTube are not cable, they're streaming services wholeheartedly, but that's happening not only in the home. People are, you know, half of the videos on YouTube are being consumed on mobile devices. And lest you think that this little five-year-old or this big five-year-old company, which is actually owned by Google, is, you know, kind of like reached a plateau, they're growing. The mobile watch time is growing 100% year over year, and the watch time is up totally 60% year over year. There's no business in the world that wouldn't kill for that kind of growth. So that's that. You know, this video content is not going back in the tube, and it's huge. And the other thing that people forget about is that people are consuming video also on social media. So Facebook is doing 4 billion video views a day. And I'm going to just make a little point about Snapchat as the latest kind of social media platform. How many of you, when you first heard about Facebook, said, I'm never going to do that? Tell the truth. I want the truth now. How many of you said, I'm raising my hand? It's like, I think almost everybody did at one point say, this social, you know, it's just not for me. Well, that's what people are saying now about Snapchat. And I've started researching it because enough of the thought leaders in social media that I follow say this is important, you need to pay attention. And it's important if for no other reason than 60% of the 13 to 34-year-olds are Snapchatters on smartphones. And I want to show you a little kind of what that looks like. But the bottom line, what I want you to get, these are just a couple of examples out of social media. But, you know, video is no longer about traditional entertainment, in case you thought it was. You know, and it isn't even those cat videos on YouTube. And it isn't really just people sharing videos of a wedding or bar mitzvah or whatever on Facebook. It's all kinds of presentations, all kinds of public service announcements, all kinds of political action videos from every point of view imaginable. So this is Snapchat out of a presentation of a guy that I follow called Gary Vaynerchuk. And I just want to use it to underscore the ESPN and CNN content here. Because a lot of people are not aware of the fact that those same networks that were born when I was at USA in the early 80s, CNN and ESPN, for example, are now generating exclusive content for Snapchat. When you watch on Snapchat, it's not watching TV. It isn't. It's a little bit, I'm being a little bit into a gray area here because there's some video involved, but they also create kind of animations with audio that are very Snapchat-esque. It's a complete new platform. But it's not just kids, you know, dating and doing sexual things or whatever. It has a reputation for the sexual content. I'm yet to see any sexual content. Not that I'm disappointed, but it is a whole new way to communicate that is in real time, and it isn't just kids doing it. It's big media companies and advertisers, and that's a dimension of the new digital world, the new digital video world. So that's one. All of this is being delivered from the cloud via streaming. Number two is that the future of video is a production free-for-all, right? Where once it was the studios and the networks in a formulaic, I actually used to work in Hollywood, and there was the season for the pilots, and then the pilots would sometimes get contracts for 6 or 13 episodes, and that was where the content came from. Now the content comes from everywhere. And I can't even list the things, but there's 3D television, there's GoPro cameras being flown around on drones, there's smartphone videos being, documenting news stories while they happen, and it goes on and on. So the studios and networks, like I said before, have lost control. And the result is, and this is really exciting to me because it's a democratization, is a whole other ecosystem. At the top of the ecosystem, I'm going to revisit Netflix and YouTube, for example, because Netflix is not just a delivery platform. I hope you all are aware that they've made themselves into a content production firestorm that has traditional cable people upset, because not only are they doing this year, and there will be more next year, 320 hours of original programs, but they had 45 Emmy nominations, 2 Oscar nominations, and 10 Golden Globe. They're making good things. House of Cards, Orange is the New Black, Arrested Development, and many others. So they've become a real player just in the entertainment sphere using their streaming platform. YouTube, a lot of people are not aware, has a whole subsidiary called YouTube Space that is dedicated to original content for the web. And they have production facilities in LA, New York, London, Tokyo, Sao Paulo, and Berlin. So they've become a player in the original content sphere. So the ecosystem is being disrupted in that way. It's also being disrupted through the social media and through the other distribution platforms. So the cable distribution for a company like HBO, and again, this is something that I've been waiting to come, and it's just happened in the last year. You don't only just get HBO. How many people have watched HBO Go? I mean, are aware of HBO Go? So maybe half of you. So HBO has the traditional cable channel. They now have HBO Go, which is available via streaming. So you could do it on your iPad. You can do it via an Apple TV or a Roku or that kind of device. And then they have HBO Now, which is basically an app. So there's the cable service, the streaming service, and the app. And HBO has broken down the wall. Everybody thought that If it's a cable channel, it'll be exclusive to cable. It'll never go on the web. You'll never be able to subscribe directly for HBO without cable. That's what HBO now is. You can buy HBO without being a cable subscriber. And my prediction, and I feel very confident about it, is that you'll be able to subscribe to any cable network in that way. I'm a golf enthusiast, so I look forward to being able to subscribe to the Golf Channel without a cable subscription. The other thing, you know, so I talked about the original production. The other avenue, which has this big umbrella term, is user-generated content. So who's a user? Everybody's a user, including all kinds of small producers. And that's where it gets really fun. This part of the redefinition of this ecosystem is that there's new forms of financing. And one of my favorite kind of articles, and I put up, it's by Kevin Kelly, on, and you can get it at kk.org, is called The 1,000 True Fans. And he wrote it back in the 90s. It's actually a pretty old article. But the paradigm of it is that if you have 1,000, right, everybody, in the old days, everybody had a blockbuster mentality. If you were going to make a movie, it had to be a blockbuster. If you were going to write a book, it needed to be a bestseller. And what's important about 1,000 true fans is that if you have 1,000 true fans, 1,000 customers, 1,000 followers who pay $100 a month for whatever, I'm sorry, $100 a year, excuse me, 1,000 fans that pay $100 a year for your content, you're making $100,000 a year. So individuals can do that. If you're a rock band with four musicians, you can do the math. But the point is that 1,000 true fans is not a huge audience, right? And so the numbers become really interesting. On top of that, try and figure out in your mind the overlay of this sharing economy stuff. And I'm not going to go off into the multi-billion dollar valuations, other than to say what I just said, of companies like Uber and Airbnb. But they're sharing economy companies where people can sell a piece of, you know, rent out a room in their home or grab a ride from a non-licensed taxi driver. And I hope you're all aware that these companies have basically disrupted major industries. Within the video industry, that now represents producers going directly to their audience. And I've got a piece of a slide here from a site that I like called Patreon. A lot of people are familiar with productions being funded with Kickstarter or Indiegogo. I think the next wave of that is this Patreon or Patreon platform. It's patreon.com, P-A-T-R-E-O-N, for those of you listening to the audio, where people subscribe to content. Kind of the queen of Patreon is Amanda Palmer, who's a rocker. She now has people subscribe to $37,000 a thing, is how she defined it. A lot of people, like podcasters, are using Patreon for a monthly subscription. Amanda Palmer said, I want to write books, I want to produce new music, I want to do videos. Whenever I say it's a thing, then you get charged. I'm actually a subscriber for $1 because I want to see what she's doing. But you can subscribe at whatever level you want to support her work. She also has an incredible TED Talk I want to recommend called The Art of Asking, because she is the queen of this. But so she's making a really good living every time she feels inspired to create a creative thing. Little more kind of like pedestrian, if you will, is this shown here on the lower left is, you know, The Hillywood. They're at 417 patrons who are paying whatever they're paying a month. And we can see that they're generating $6,900 a month in revenue. So if you can build the following, the 1,000 true fans applies directly into a platform like this. It really, in a lot of ways, is like book publishing. You know, we're all pretty familiar, I hope, at this point with the fact that the book publishing industry, in a similar way, has been transformed, that a lot of people are publishing their own books rather than go through the laborious, time-consuming, not necessarily productive process of traditional publishing, if you can get a traditional publisher. In the same way, video producers of all kinds are going to the internet to find their audience, to get support, and to produce whatever they want to produce. So this is the Patreon homepage, recurring funding for artists and creators. So that's the second major wave. The third major wave is this notion of the empowered consumers. And this is in some ways wonderfully challenging for all of us because we've been given new superpowers, if you will, because we get to vote. And one of my favorite stories is The Martian, which just so happens this week to be the highest grossing movie in Hollywood. Not very many people know how that movie came to be made. Anybody here know the story of where it came from? So The Martian movie, the story, right? Not Matt Damon. But the story for The Martian was written by a guy who gave it away for free on the internet. He did it in a serial form because he loved science fiction and wanted to write a story about how would a guy try and survive on Mars. So the short of it is that the people really liked it and started following it on his blog when he was publishing it chapter by chapter. And they said, you got to make the book. We want the book. The blog is not enough. Make a book. So he went to Amazon and put it at the lowest possible price of $1.99 and started selling the book on Amazon. Well, people liked the story. And it got a following to such an extent that at the end of the day, he got a six-figure publishing deal, and the number of his movie rights deal is not known, but that's where that movie came from, a guy following his passion and writing something for free, and us consumers, right, the consumers going, I like that. I want to support that. You should put that out as a book. That's why he did it, because the audience said, you got to do it. We see that in so many forms on the web today. We have power. If we write a review on Amazon.com, please write one of my book. It really helps. It makes a difference. If you like something on Netflix, they help you find other movies. You know, if you give it a 5-star review, they help you find other movies that you might like. I'm a big fan of Rotten Tomatoes, which integrates with Flixster. I won't go to a movie in the theater unless it gets like at least an 80 on Rotten Tomatoes, because you know that way I can filter out and know what's good. That's both professional reviewers and consumers are telling me what they think. So I can't get into the whole thing about influencers with internet marketing, but the big thing with internet marketing, take my word for it as a professional who works in that space, is influencers. So they could be bloggers, they can be people with a YouTube channel, big social media following, what have you, and they make a big difference in social media. It's like the old PR in the new media. That's just the way this stuff is working now. What the challenging part of it is that we can no longer be amusing ourselves to death. There's a great book by a guy named Neil Postman that goes back to the 70s, I think, about TV and sitting there like a couch potato. You know, when I did a TV show back in San Francisco, I was lucky enough to have Scoop Nisker on, and he's famous for saying, if you don't like the news, go out and make some of your own. And that's really kind of the bottom line here is, if you just want to watch TV, that's your choice, but you have now opportunities to influence the media and to be the media that really have changed everything. Number four, I think I'm on time here. The future of video is the leverage of authentic connections. And that's where, you know, this is kind of my passion, but it isn't just something that I love. There's reality to it. And let me take you back to the beginning of the internet to give you perspective. I don't know how many of you have seen this cartoon, and for those listening on audio, it's two dogs sitting at a computer, and one dog is saying to the other one, on the internet, nobody knows you're a dog. And it dovetails into some basic advice that I've been giving to clients about websites for a long time. You know, in the early days of the web was really a text-based medium. And people began to put more pictures as we were doing more websites. And I had to tell clients, don't use those crappy, boring, generic stock photography. Get photograph of you, because they don't know if you're a dog or not. In other words, they want to know who you are. Right? Who is this person that I might do business with or I might follow on the blog? If I see them, if I see their face, at least I'll have a sense about what kind of person that is. Well, in today's world, that's now video, right? Not just a picture, but be present. And I'm going to be doing workshops on this subject. Be present on video so people can get a feeling for who you are. I put a big X through the Keebler cookie logo, because the pitch that the cookies come from elves who live in trees just isn't going to fly anymore. people want to know, does it have sugar? Is it organic sugar? Where is it baked? What are, you know, it's like, it's a different world now. So we're progressing from text to images to video, and we're meeting real people. You know, for those of you who aren't active on social media, one of the amazing things about the video dimensions of social media are the fact that you get to meet real people and network with real people. Periscope is a streaming video platform that people are doing with their smartphones. I'm a big fan of something brand new that I'm sure a lot of you haven't heard about yet, called Blab. It's blab.im is the URL, and it's a four-way video chat. All kinds of people are doing programs there. It's very easy to use. They kind of like got something that Google Hangouts and some of these other platforms haven't done. Totally free. And what's awesome about it, I know it's a radical concept, there's real people meeting real people. And they actually like become friends and do things together, just like coming to the Commonwealth Club and meeting other people. It's you know, so authenticity is a reality. When I talk about internet marketing, I talk about authentic, long-term relationship building. You know, it isn't just, you know, pardon the expression, but slam, bam, thank you, man, or some kind of cheap shot, or how quickly can you do it and make a sale? You know, that's really 20th century bull. What's happening today is that people want this kind of authentic engagement. And so business, as far as I'm concerned, is about relationship building and trusting someone and knowing them and wanting to do business with them because you like it. I'm also just going to throw in a plug for Brené Brown. If you haven't seen the TED Talk, The Power of Vulnerability, I consider it required viewing. She really shows how, through her research, that making yourself vulnerable leads to human connection, which then makes life worthwhile, basically. That's my Reader's Digest version. So I call all of that humanistic marketing, and it's a whole subject in and of itself. But, you know, this was something that just came across my desk this week or in the last week. Advertisers are so fixated on blasting through the noise in publishers, and I'm sorry, advertisers are so fixated on blasting through the noise, and publishers are so desperate to monetize that they haven't noticed just how bad this whole experience has become for the people who matter most, and that's their audiences. Joe Loft, and you could Google, it's the empathy, stupid. And that's what is making the world go round in this day and age. And if you didn't believe that much, then here's data from this company, Bonfire Marketing, showing that 91% of people make honesty about the products and services the most important part of the appeal. You know, a full 30 points ahead of product utility. Right? Our intuition or our gut would say product utility and the fact that the product gets the job done is the most important thing. No. The most important thing is that they trust you and that they like you and they believe that you're not trying to sell some bill of goods. So that, and this is my attraction funnel, is that, you know, it really is a dance, like dating or like relationship building. It takes time. In a relationship, we know that a relationship takes years to really kind of nurture and become real and to work. So you attract people, then you want to engage and provide some real value. Then you can think about a relationship making a sale and converting it. Very short version of that. But so at the end of the day, given those four megatrends, who are you, right? Who are you going to be as a producer? How are you going to take advantage of these opportunities? As a consumer, are you going to write reviews and be a real participant? Are you going to make intelligent choices? The fact, because now you can pretty much get any kind of information by video that you want and connect with the people and the content that you find the most uplifting, that you find the most inspiring. As a business owner, are you going to build authentic connections and really take advantage of video to do it in a new way? And as a citizen, or we call it a netizen, are you really going to show up as a full-on responsible participant, not just to vote, but to be educated and to share valuable information? And so the bottom line for me is what matters now is really being valuable, trying to offer content, offer perspectives, offer entertainment, fun, what have you, that's authentically valuable. Because that's the only thing that moves the needle. being clever, just being there and not doing something valuable is really not going to make a difference. And that's the way you build authentic connections, which at the end of the day, it's about community. Whether you're talking about community at the San Francisco level or community at the Bay Area level, California level, United States, or planetary level. You know, it is about making real connections. I love doing these blabs. I've had people from Jamaica, Brazil, Argentina, Australia, New Zealand, and a couple kind of, England. Anyway, it's like, it's not just the United States. It's like the web is this international thing, and I'm making connections with people all over the world. And so the other part of it that I'm always talking about with marketing is that you have to try things, right? We have this mindset, at least what I've seen, and I've seen it myself, that we should get, you know, it should be handed to us. Or there should be like, okay, the one quick fix, the one silver bullet that's going to get us down the road. And this is like a practice. It's like, you know, and so the freedom and the commitment to take risks, to experiment and play is how you're going to learn about this new digital world. It's not just, oh, Patreon, we got the answer, now we're going to go and do it, done. Patreon isn't going to happen unless you're doing the other stuff I'm talking about, like making something really valuable, building authentic connections, and then, okay, maybe your first Patreon didn't work. Well, why didn't it work? What can you do next time to make it better? Be willing to take risks and fail. Every business book out there will tell you failure is a key part of success, and the web is like the laboratory for that. So you got to be in it to win it. You got to try. So in summary, digital video is now being delivered by streaming, and the streaming delivery is going to continue to grow. The production is a free-for-all. You can use an iPhone. You can use a smartphone. You can use a GoPro. Try it. See if you engage people. If that doesn't work, try something else. But there's no barriers to entry anymore. You don't need even the, you know, it'd be nice to have a notebook to be able to do editing. But, you know what I mean? For the price of a notebook computer and an internet connection, you can pretty much do almost anything. You as a consumer, and we're all consumers, even if we're producers, we're empowered now. We have a challenge to participate, and I challenge you to participate because we want good people creating good content and being in the game. And you know, bottom line, it's about authentic connections. The old I talk about in my book, by the way, which is for sale out in the lobby. I talk about new marketing and old marketing. And the old marketing is about this pushy, manipulative selling. The new marketing is about engagement, attraction, we call it a pull, you know, and doing that in an organic, natural, authentic way. So those are the four mega trends, and I really appreciate your attention and the opportunity to talk. I have a sheet up here. If you want to be on my mail list, I'll happy to send you out the slides for free. Or go to combridges.com and you can subscribe to the blog or subscribe to the newsletter. And I'd love to hear from you. There's a contact form too. I welcome your questions and would love to be of service.
Okay, thanks to John Whelan, giving us a round of applause there. Okay. We would like to remind our listening audience that this is a program of the Commonwealth Club of California. We'll now open the floor for questions. Please keep your questions short. If you have a question, please raise your hand and speak into the mic. I'll have the mic here and I'll walk around with it. Okay, so raise your hand and I'll come see you.
Any questions? Any challenges or did it all make sense? No. Is it flipped on? No, that's me.
Oh, there we go. Okay, I'm going to start off with the first question. And I'll be honest with you. One of the reasons I wanted to have this John come and talk about this was because I saw a program on public TV called Generation Like that was a documentary, I think, done by Frontline. And it showed what was going on with YouTube and how people were, particularly young people, were spending a lot of time being liked. There was a young woman on there who spent hours and hours and hours trying to be the most popular fan of a particular movie. There was a young man who just shot his own videos and became a celebrity and was invited to Beyonce concerts and all this. And the only thing the guy did was just talked about himself. And I thought, why is this interesting? So it really dawned on me at that point that this is a lot bigger than I thought it was, to the point that, as John mentioned, marketing now is completely different. So can you talk to us about, say more about the future of marketing products and services? Because I think now that the old way of just advertising because I'm standing in front of TV is over.
Yeah, well, it's going to be A plus B. So the old way, unfortunately, to my mind, is going to be around for a long time. But the new ways are catching, you know, a whole new wave. And I don't know if you want me to flip back to the slide about my engagement funnel. But it's about relationship building. So the basic principle, some of this is in the book and some of it is getting new all the time, but is, you know, when you want to create a relationship with somebody, whether it's a romantic type relationship or just a business relationship, you can't, you know, kind of walk right into the cocktail party and go, give me your business, right? You start a conversation, you let somebody get to know you, and on the web, it's very much the same thing. So you attract people that have some interest in what you're offering, and that interest comes out of you being valuable from the get-go. Right, you know, I'm giving away about 2/3 of my book for a subscription to my email newsletter. Soon I'll be giving away the PDF of the whole book. Because I want people to get to know me. I want people to get as much value as they can from the get-go, because that then begins a relationship. And then you have to show up for the relationship, right? If you're great on the first 10 dates and then become horrible, nobody wants a relationship like that. You need to keep showing up. And so, you know, some of it gets mechanical, like automated email follow-up sequences where you continue to be valuable, not just stay in their face, but continue to be valuable. And that's called, we talk about top of the funnel, middle of the funnel, bottom of the funnel. So the middle of the funnel is called relationship nurturing, right? So you subscribe to my email newsletter. I better give you something valuable for being a subscriber or you're going to unsubscribe. And I would too. So that's nurturing the lead. And then at some point, some of the people want to do business and want what you have to offer. But again, you can't ask for the sale on the first date. You have to like develop a relationship and be present. And that's part of what happens on social media, is that people be present, right? It's like, I'm there. I'm publishing content. I'm, you know, finding out about Blab and then writing a blog post about Blab and why I like it and why I think it's worth people checking out. That kind of thing is what the way I offer value. So given whatever your business is, how do you offer value and begin to do relationships? Yeah. The mic is coming. I'm your play-by-play announcer. The mic has arrived.
So with all this awesome information that we have, the seconds, right, we get from all these things you've talked about, what are your thoughts on the negative aspect of it? I know, like, sometimes, like with Facebook, I get so overwhelmed, I almost get anxious because of the amount of information and the comparison I find myself doing, or I have a 17-year-old son who's looking at all these things. I watch what he's looking at. And it's almost like he has this thing where, like, oh, I need to be a millionaire and, like, seconds, or I need to know all this, and he just kind of like, I don't know, in a way I almost feel it's kind of bad on societies as well. I don't know.
Well, there it's a really good question, and I'm not a Pollyanna in the sense that it's all good. I do get excited about the opportunities, but clearly there are downsides, and clearly there are bad people. You know, you can't have a public wall without graffiti, it seems, at least in a city. And the same kind of people that deface public property are the kind of people that are a pain in the butt on social media. So there's, you know, we need to be good citizens and teach our kids that there are bad people and how to respond to them. A good feature about Facebook, for example, is that you can block people. So I get spammed on Facebook and, you know, somebody, you know, wants to be my friend from India because the only reason they want to do it is business. They don't know who I am. You know, so you can be discriminating, and you have to be discriminating. But, you know, it's kind of like email. I mean, we have email. Email is like the new postal system, and it is spam infused, right? I mean, we all are dealing with how much spam there is in our email. It doesn't mean we stop doing email, because email is part of how we live. the story that I tell, and from a business point of view, when I spoke at an Inc. Growing the Company conference in the early 80s, pre-web, but email was there. And I sort of felt like I had to lecture to the businesses because they weren't responding to their email. And so the metaphor I used was, you have an 800 number, a toll-free line. You would never have your toll-free line not be answered because your customers are calling. What just so happens, some of your customers are now calling by email. That's how they want to reach you. And now fast forward to 2015, some of your customers want to interact with you by social media. The customer has the right to interact with you by any channel that they want to interact with you. So if you're not on social media, you've shut off one of your 800 numbers or one of your lines of communication for the customer to talk to you. I don't know if I fully answered your question about the downside. It's a big, long subject. You know, I one of the big picture comments that I can make is I think, you know, and this is very personal opinion as opposed to like the stuff I just told you about digital video, which I think is more hard facts. But, you know, for me, television and television addiction is one of the most serious problems in our culture. It is addictive. It does put people into a drug-like state. And the difference between that and interacting on the web is like night and day. Is interacting on the web perfect and like this holy experience? Not necessarily, sometimes. But not, you know, probably not. But it is definitely a step in the right direction because it's participatory. But just like democracy, social media being participatory requires an education, knowing how it works, being willing to show up at the voting booth, and hopefully other things. So it's a mixed bag, but I think we're moving in the right direction. And I think, you know, the opportunities and the positive aspects outweigh the negative aspects. Is that enough of an answer? Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, yeah. I wish, you know, one other thing that comes up, you know, in my frequently asked questions is this thing about privacy. And Scott McNeely, the founder of Sun Microsystems, famously said, I think it was back in the early 90s, you know, privacy, you don't have any, forget about it. And if anybody's seen the documentary Citizen 4, which if you haven't seen, I recommend, you know, that's pretty much a fact. Our privacy is gone via the Patriot Act and the United States government subpoenaing, it's built into the system now that they have access to all the phone records, all the email records. You just should assume everything that you post, everything that you write can be monitored. And that's just the way it is. And I encourage transparency, and I pretty much live transparent. You know, my Facebook is full of spiritual stuff and my iPhone photography and the occasional political statement. You know, it's just who I am, and I'm willing to be who I am. And if people don't like that, they won't follow me, and it's fine.
A follow-up question, I think, to your question, because it's one that I worry about myself, which is, suppose you're a person that wants to turn this stuff off at some point and go for a walk in the park or, you know, engage in real life. The more I hear you, the more I'm afraid that we're getting to a point that I can never be unengaged in this system. Is that true?
No, it's definitely not true. And that's a function. And that you did mention overwhelm in the earlier question also. And it, you know, because I teach workshops on internet marketing to small businesses in particular, this issue of overwhelm is probably the number one issue for small businesses. Because it's one thing for a Fortune 500 company that puts together a staff of 20 to do their social media, and, you know, it's like operated like a department. It is a department. For a small solopreneur-style business, balancing doing the business, doing the direct marketing, and doing some of the social media stuff is a very big challenge. But that doesn't mean you can't go for a walk in the park. I mean, I try and play golf twice a week. And part of the reason, I mean, I love it, and it's fun, and it's exercise, and I get outdoors, and I turn my friggin' thing off. You know, I mean, it's like, that's part of the exercise for me, is having the phone off. I don't even listen to it. I hate when people do that on the golf course, because it's kind of like, that's a sanctuary for me. And it's like, people go, that takes like 5 hours to play a round of golf. I'm like, yeah, it's cool. It's good.
What I'm hearing you saying is that we studied this long enough, there is an efficient way to participate and consume this new capability.
Yeah, and it's a great question, Gerald, because let's tell the truth about it, that people are work addicted too. It isn't just social media. It's like, you know, Sheryl Sanders' book, I mean, it's all, you know, Arianna Huffington's book, on and on, is about this work-life balance story. And however you want to language that, we all need to go for those walks that you're talking about. If, you know, I totally believe that if you're not meditating, I'm a big proponent of meditation, and that is now like broad-based science. I'm no longer on the edge in terms of recommending that. You know, I need to, you know, obviously I'm disconnected when I'm doing that. And I think everybody needs that kind of disconnection as part of the balance. And is that easy to do? No, that requires some discipline. But otherwise, you do get swallowed up, and you do get overwhelmed, and you do get whatever.
Okay, now for one last question.
So as a marketer for a small firm, we have to struggle a little bit to know how to allocate our resources. You were talking about the new things that are coming out, like Blab, Periscope, Snapchat, of course. But what are the things that you would advise to leave off of kind of the marketing plan?
I wish there was a one-size-fits-all for that, but it really is a function of who your audience is, right? I think you told me before you're selling to businesses, is that correct? So LinkedIn is going to be a major center for you because it's so business-oriented. You know, and likewise, whatever the business is, who's your audience, right? That's not, you know, marketing 101 is you start with your objectives and who the audience is and where do those people hang out? How do I reach those people? Are there groups on Facebook or on Google Plus or wherever, LinkedIn obviously, where I can connect with the people that I need to connect with? So every business has to make strategic decisions based on who do they want to reach and what are our resources, because with limited resources, you have to make choices. But that's sort of like, it may sound like a no-brainer, but I see over and over again with small businesses where they think, or like the mindset is, I have to do all of it, right? I have to do Pinterest and Instagram and Snapchat. It's like, no, you don't have to do all of it, in fact. But you're going to make choices, right? And start out with choosing maybe three social networks that you're going to work with. I think probably to try and give you a generic answer, the most valuable and most frequently overlooked social network is the number two social network, as I told you earlier, which was
YouTube.
Yep. You know, so that, you know, that a lot of people are afraid of the commitment to do video, and like I said, it takes some experimentation and trial and error, but that's where you can tell your story the most effectively, and that's where you can be found. You know, being found on Google, everybody knows that's important. Being found on YouTube is a frequently overlooked low-hanging fruit where you can not only connect with people, but connect in this video environment where people get a direct experience of who you are and hopefully can hear your message well told in a short, snappy video.
Thanks for John Leighton for an exciting presentation. We also would like to thank our audience here as well as those listening to the recording. And now this meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California is adjourned.